Hi there. Welcome to Mushroom Hour. Today on the Mushroom Hour podcast, we are graced by the presence of Jana Nicole and Max Mudy, founders of the All Things Fungi Festival in the UK. Thank you guys for joining us here on the Mushroom Hour.
Thank you for having us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. I've listened to enough shows, so it's kind of cool to hear you say that.
Yeah. Big fan.
I'm humbled, and thank you for tuning in, and thank you both for being so gracious with our time zone and technical and every issue you can have we've had and we've overcome, so it feels good. Well, we've just met before the show, and I was going to ask you all the questions that I'm curious about, and that's why I wanted to hit record, is I want everybody to hear it. So maybe we'll start with you, Jana, and then to Max. Just tell me a little bit of that origin story. How did you come to fall in love with fungi? How did you get where you are today?
Oh, good question. I am an artist, and I work with collage mixed media. And what really brought me around to the fungi is the mycelium. I really wanted to go the underground, the hyphae, the roots, the soil, and the added bonus was the mushrooms that came with it. As an artist looking at the mushrooms, it was about the color, and especially being out in nature, seeing these vibrant, beautiful colors that seem so unnatural, but are nature. And I wanted to draw them and recreate them, and that's how I ended up falling in love with them. And wanted to have them represented in my work.
I love that. Mushrooms are nature's art. I mean, so many forms, so many colors, absolutely beautiful. And then Max, how about yourself?
So, where do I start? I'm a photographer. So I moved out of the city about 6 or 7 years ago and just started noticing a lot more mushrooms. I started riding my bike across the South Downs, which is some hills over here, and I noticed a lot, and I just got really interested in trying to identify them. And you know, I did have like an experience with mushrooms, you know, 20 plus years ago. That was my first introduction, really. And yeah, it was really in the last kind of 7 years that I've photographed them, documented them. And then, you know, I think probably you're the same. As soon as you start looking, you want to learn more, you want to identify the species, and then you end up getting a microscope, and then you end up kind of going down this rabbit hole. And now I'm at a point where, I don't like to call myself a mycologist, amateur, but, you know, we are starting to get certain works, doing survey and things like that. It's kind of just spiraled from wanting to identify and eat, and then here we are now, and we're running a mushroom festival now. Mm. So it's been a crazy journey.
And I think a lot of people can find themselves in that story, especially of, you know, I was out, I found them, I fell in love with them, especially someone with a photographer's eye. I mean, it's not a surprise to me. We have an artist and a photographer who notice these beautiful forms and colors in nature, suddenly want to learn more. And I love hearing that story of how it then tapped you in deeper to wanting to understand biology and ecology. And it seemed like at the end there, just want to build on that a little bit. You said, you know, we're doing surveys now. What has that grown into? Because once you get the microscope, once you're taking really good photographs, you now have superpowers and are able to really contribute to the unknown picture of fungal diversity. So maybe if there is a story to tell there, talk about a little how that's evolved maybe into something more formalized for you.
Well, I'm lucky to be, I think the community is amazing with mushrooms everywhere, all around the world. And I'm lucky to be surrounded by some really amazing people who've been doing this for a long time. So I feel like I learned to identify things quite quickly. And, you know, just making the connections that I've made through the social media channels and things like that has introduced me to a lot of people. And there's actually a serious lack of mycologists in the UK that are going out and sort of identifying fungi. So there's sort of a gap in the market there. So just through my connections, things came my way. So I organized a team of people, some very experienced people, a lady called Iona Fraser and Vern Stothers. They've got Iona's probably got like, I don't know, 20 years experience identifying and teaching with mushrooms. Mm. So we kind of put this team together, and we ended up going to survey some grassland in Dorset And yeah, we were looking for kind of grassland species. So we ended up doing a survey down there, which lasted 3 days. I don't know how many species we identified in the end. It was hundreds, but we did some soil analysis as well. And that was sent off for sequencing at one of the universities. And there was some really amazing results. There was a fair few unidentified species that were in there. So it was kind of linked to Natural England, which is it's an organization in the UK which kind of looks after natural spaces. So yeah, there's plenty, and there's not really much of these grassland habitats left. Unimproved grassland is really rare in the UK. You've only got like churchyards and very few spaces left, which kind of provides the right habitat for those interesting species, you know, like your wax caps, your earth tongues, and things like that. So yeah, that's kind of where we're at with that. Yeah.
Well, there's the Sussex Fungus Group, which run by Nick Applin, and the knowledge between Max and Nick and the people who go out, and I get to tag along, and the patience that everybody has in trying to identify and point out and share that knowledge, if it's over and over again, you know, to keep pointing to the same mushroom. It's like, yeah, that's a King Alfred cake. Yeah, it's a King Alfred cake again. You know, it's an amazing community that is really willing to allow people who don't have that knowledge and are willing to learn, and it's all encompassing. It's a beautiful thing, and we're very lucky to have that. But it's different over here than it is in the States, where each group is, they don't communicate as well, I believe, as the States does, sharing their information.
Yeah, I think
Interesting.
we're quite inspired by the way you guys kind of do mycology in America. It's kind of like, you know, you've got a very welcoming group. Not saying it's not welcoming here, but I don't know how to say this without kind of putting my foot in it. I don't
More
want to offend anybody.
organized.
Organized, yeah, for sure. So you've got in the UK, you've got the British Mycological Society, which is amazing. You know, they've done some incredible
Right.
work. It's a great establishment, and
The formalized establishment.
yeah, it's incredible what they do. And yeah, I think it's just for us, it seems to be like there's people that forage in the UK, and then there's people that identify mushrooms, you know, more kind of down the scientific route. And there's groups of people that all love fungi but don't necessarily communicate as well, I think. So I think what we were hoping to do is kind of just open up fungi for everybody and make it a bit more inclusive,
Accessible for everybody.
accessible, and
I mean, we're very
welcoming.
fortunate. We have Kew Gardens and the Fungarium, which is,
World
if you can
famous.
ever, yeah, it's wonderful to be able to have access to that, and they're very generous with their time.
That's a really interesting, almost cultural dynamic that you brought up there, you know, institutionalized or more academic, rigorous, formal scientific study, and then you have your groups, people that look like me, people are want to get out in the woods, kind of more, you know, a lot of the early kind of mycology groups in America were like punks and hippies and people that were like into these organisms that no one was exploring and were getting into it. And over time, those groups have come together partially because there was a lot of overlap where, you know, we were lucky in folks in academic circles. You think of Bryn Dentinger, you think of people at different universities who were like going to mycology club events and were part of that group of kind of interesting characters, eccentric characters. And then they kind of are able to bridge that gap. So I feel like a lot of that has happened, but it is still definitely a gap that is constantly needing to be bridged. It's like bring together the folks who are doing that formal institutional kind of what they would consider more rigorous science and people that are like field naturalists and amateurs who are making really good observations, are getting more and more educated on how to collect good data and then feed into each other in kind of this loop. And so it sounds like that's very much the case there. I just wonder if sometimes when I think of the UK, you know, you think of these Victorian era institutions, like naturalist institutions, and maybe there's a little more of a formal, I don't want to say barrier or wall, but maybe there's a little bit more of a gap to bridge, which is why something like a festival that brings everyone together is fantastic. So then, yeah, lead us right into Jana, the origins of the UK, all things fungi festival, because a lot of people here know we have a lot of regional fungi festivals, a lot of meetups and events, but what inspired you then to do this where you are.
Well, believe it was meeting Max. We both, you know, his love of mushrooms and my love of it came together. And we realized that there was a gap for a weekend. It's not a completely new idea, obviously. You've got Telluride, you've got other festivals, amazing festivals, but we don't have a full-on weekend festival here that honors the fungi. And a great saying that somebody said at our festival last year is, you get rid of all the small talk and you just dive deep right into the mushroom talk. You don't have to go through any of it. We're all here for the same thing. Let's just jump in and dive into it. And it's also bridging the gap where art meets science. And again, having it open for people to who aren't scientists, who are maybe a little intimidated by the information, but yet are wanting to learn about it. And so coming in through an artistic side, it's a little bit more gentler. And so it's such a visual thing, mushrooms, and we wanted to enhance that and honor it. And the festival is, because it's on a weekend, you just get to stay there. You get to hear all the lectures that happen. And then afterwards, you get to sit and talk to everybody who has been lecturing during the day, and you're sitting at a fire. So it's a very leveling experience, and not being rushed into it. And you get to have the forays that we have, and Max runs a UV walk, and we have workshops, and we have music, and it's just, it's a really gentle place to come and learn.
So yeah, there's wellness events as well, so we do some yoga and gong baths and things like that. But yeah, it's just, it's an amazing community, and we're just really lucky to have the opportunity to be able to do this for everyone, you know, because it's quite a lot of responsibility for us to put on this festival and make sure that it kind of like it runs. It's good. Well, yeah, it runs, it works, but it also you know, it's good for the community and it ticks all the boxes. You know, last year we had like, had a tent full of 100 people just sat down watching a lecture about grassland fungi, and we had Damon over from America doing a DNA sequencing talk, you know, microscopy. So we're trying to, like, you know, cater for people on all levels, from beginners to people who, you know, are quite deep down the rabbit hole already. And it's a real honor to be able to do it,
but also with humor too. And we have Ali the fungi guy, who just my favorite. Brings such he's brilliant. Yeah. Absolutely brilliant. Brilliant. And, you know, we had Sam Lee, who is an amazing musician, and he had said that it brought out the 11-year-old mycologist in him, to meet people that he normally didn't get to meet and have these conversations. So you're bridging all the gaps with music and art and science, and everybody's come together. I mean, Christopher Timmerman came and did a lecture and then did a set playing the guitar and singing. And it was the first time he was able to do that. So it was really, really amazing to have these people and that knowledge and sharing it.
That's beautiful. And I want to remind all of our listeners, we are on KPCA 103.3 here in Petaluma, talking to Jana Nicole and Max Mudie all the way over in the UK, telling us about the All Things Fungi Festival that they're hosting there in England. You know, when you talk about blending some of these different things, I think about how interesting it is always to be at points of juxtapositions of different, I don't want to say polar opposites, but different parts of a spectrum. So you think art, science, you think amateur, professional. And so I love that you guys want to just kind of blend these things together, because in the middle, some really interesting things can happen. And I love hearing about blending wellness, blending some of these other topics that I think naturally kind of flow with an interest in mycology that spills into an interest in ecology. And of course, it spills into thinking about your own wellness. And I think here in our area, that's definitely something that resonates as more and more people are trying to host events that can kind of bring together some of these different parts. And you start forming culture, right? Something that I think often we feel like it is lacking.
100%. Very much so. I mean, we are very fortunate to be on a private land that the owner is incredibly supportive. We're surrounded by SSSI woods and beautiful, beautiful fungi.
It's like, I mean, yeah, there's really interesting habitat. There's some pretty rare bryophytes on site. Some of the rock formations are really interesting. There's like sandstone outcrops, and there's a real mix of interesting trees. And yeah, we just try and kind of incorporate literally all things fungi. So everything from soil health to mental health. You know, we've got composting talks as well. You know, because if you're into fungi and you're not into soil health, then you know you're doing it wrong, aren't you?
What are you doing?
So yeah.
Basket weaving.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much going on at the festival. We could literally talk for hours and list it all. But if you do want to find out more, allthingsfungi.co.uk, you can find out more on there.
Beautiful. And one thing that piqued my interest, you were talking about a UV light hike, Jana. Tell us a little bit about that. Take us on a journey, Max or Jana. Take us on a journey through the UV hunt for bioluminescent fungi.
Yeah, I'll pass you over to Max. This is his expertise. Whoa. He's an amazing, amazing experience. And it was supposed to be about 20 people, and it ended up, I think, 70 people. We were trying to hold people back.
Trying to wrangle them.
People, oh, forget it. It was like wrangling cats. But it's a very special experience to be able to go out and do that.
So, yeah, I mean, I got a UV torch a fair few years ago now. I can't remember who it was. I've been trying to find the original video. I don't think it was Damon Allen or Sydney or anyone like that. I think it was some random YouTube video where someone had a UV light on some sulfur tuft, and I was like, oh, hello, sulfur tuft are really common. So, you know, that was where I started. And then it just sort of, again, you know, you nosedive into these things and you're like, well, I'm going to test everything. And then you're like, well, I'm just going to see which ones fluoresce. And then you sort of get into the realms of, well, what are the practical applications for UV? You know, can I actually use these to sort of identify or split species and things like that? So, you know, the photography aspect always obviously came into it for me. I just wanted to see which ones were really beautiful. And then having kind of dived into Russula and realizing that a lot of those fluoresce, and they're actually quite difficult to identify without, you know, microscopy, chemicals or DNA analysis in most cases, but they also have a slightly different fluoresce under UV light. So I figured that maybe we could actually kind of narrow down the species just using the UV light. So that kind of sent me on a bit of a spiral. My friend found a species called Psilocybe liniformans in the UK, which was actually the first record of that species. It was sent off to Kew Gardens. They sequenced it. They confirmed it. So we thought we'd go and track it down, which, you know, it's supposedly quite difficult to identify in the field or separate it from Psilocybe frumentaria, I believe. I might be a bit wavy with some pronunciations here, but I hope that, you know, allow me. So anyway, supposedly you can't separate them in the field, but if you use a UV light, they actually do have a slightly different color fluoresce on the gill edge, which I believe is the cystidial fluorescing. So, yeah, I kind of got into UV pretty deeply just down those routes. And then we started running a few UV night walks here, trying to inspire other people. And it's just, then you kind of go into minerals, insects, like all these different things like mosses. And then I found hazel trichomes on a tree in spring are really UV fluorescent. And these aphids that can negotiate the trichomes are quite beautiful as well. So there's just so much, it's a different world, you know. And the animals that can see within that spectrum obviously are having a great time. And the UV light enables us to be able to sort of get a glimpse of, you know, the like the flowers, the pollen and the, what do you call them, the stomata?
Stomata.
You know what I mean? Yeah. But those bits that the bees can see, and they're like, oh my God, there's a flower. That looks insane. I'm going to go and land on that. So, yeah, I mean, it's just a whole new world. And I even found a hedgehog in my garden that they fluoresce pink, which is quite interesting. And I kind of realized that scientists have been doing this for a long time when I started researching the pink hedgehog, that was actually documented back in the 1920s or something. So, you know, it's nothing new, the UV thing, but it is very relatively unexplored. And I think there's a lot more to do, like work-wise there, whether it's sort of practical or fun. So yeah, it's a mad world. Yeah.
I mean, we've got Sydney over in Singleton coming over and doing a mad henna UV before we go out on the walk. I mean, it just, so again, there's that science and the art meeting, and it's such a beautiful, beautiful image. And we're really excited to have him over.
Sydney's a huge inspiration, and a lot of the American mycologists are that are utilizing these tools or experimenting at least. And I think we're catching up here in the UK. So just to see how well it's received at the festival, you know, everyone wants to go out and do it, and you know, everyone's hooked, and then they've all got UV torches and they're all going out, and then they're all uploading their stuff onto iNaturalist and going, oh my God, look at this one, look at this one. And, you know, we're collecting some really good data. And I think that's the other point about the festival is the landowner's given us permission. So everything we find, we can record, some of which has already been sent off to be sequenced. And hopefully we can add more protection to the land. You know, we can maybe gets a SSSI status for something other than the bryophytes. And
Awareness. It's really about, we're opening up to children this year. Last year it was 18 and above. And on the Sunday, we're having a family day, because it's all about educating the next generation. It's the elders program. It's really, you know, children coming in with the just wanting to learn. And being able to take them out and learning from them too. I mean, it's amazing, some of these guys who are just, the knowledge that they already have. I mean, there's no way I knew anything of what they already know.
I think the elders program is quite a cool thing, because as much as we're kind of moving forward with science and we're learning a lot about fungi through, you know, sequencing and things like that, there's a lot of information that's been lost, you know, that our ancestors or, you know, different cultures have already knew. So it's, we're almost relearning some of these things, aren't we, as well as making developments and learning more about what the distribution of species that's here and what they do and you know, what they can be used for. So it's
culturally, it's been there throughout life. I mean, it's, you know, it's been forgotten. It's been reexamined. It's been hidden. And, you know, look at Victorian women who weren't allowed to do the sciences. And, you know, off they went to the ugly science of mushrooms. And Beatrix Potter, who was an amazing mycologist, and I think she was able to grow. She was the first to spore, to take.
I don't know that, but yeah.
Mushrooms from spores. You know, I mean, things that they're like, yeah, they weren't expecting women to do, and they were leading the way.
You know, so many times, just talking to someone about this, science is now proving things that cultures, ancient cultures, historical cultures have been saying forever, and we finally got the reductionist examining every constituent component and kind of the modern scientific method. We finally proved the things that they knew. And you just wonder, how did they get there? Right before the show, I was talking about a funny story about Wade Davis, who I got to interview. He tells a story of how an ancient culture in the Amazon was like encoding biochemical sequences, the actual chemical sequences, in song. They would sing these songs. Now, wow. I'm totally not doing this justice. I don't know how he figured that out. But if you took the keys or the tones they were using, there was some way that it mapped onto the actual chemical sequence of compounds within these plants, these medicinal plants. Wow. It's insane. You wonder, I mean, there is something about the magic of just being out in nature, communing with these organisms in such a tactile and kind of holistic, but the idea of like the whole organism, all your senses, where you learn things and discover things sometimes without the need of a microscope or modern instrumentation. But it's best, I think, to bring them all together. We're here. We've got the tools. Yeah. Let's bring all of that together. And I definitely want to hear more about this elders program. But I will say, Max, thank you for giving that overview of UV, because that just blew the lid off for me. And now I want to go get a little UV light and go out. And I love that piece about identification. The fact that, you know, the practical uses for some of these species, we can identify better based on UV telltale signs. And I think it's something, it's just one of those things, like you said, underexplored. That's the name of the game with mycology, but there's just so many questions, so many things to try. So beautifully, very inspiring.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, last year I think I found about 9 species of Amanita in a week and lined them all up and was checking under UV, and one of them was just glowing, you know. And it was is Amanita francettii, I believe, unless that's a species complex that are yet to unravel, which is quite possible. But yeah, it was incredible out of all of them. And putting them side by side with Amanita rubescens, say, they almost look identical under white light. There's a few key features, but to the untrained eye, that would be the same mushroom. But then you put a UV light on it and one of them is absolutely pinging bright blue and the other one just no glow whatsoever. So, you know, there's definitely some practical applications in terms of ID and splitting species for sure. There has to be. I keep mentioning the Russula thing and I said it last year and I'm like, I need to really work on that, you know, but then I just look at them and I'm like, oh, I'm scared of them. I don't want to do it.
that's actually a great one to bring up because in this area in Northern California, we get a beautiful array of Russulas and there's a lot of the foraging community that kind of paved the way out here for foragers in California were Eastern Europeans who have a great reverence for many Russula species. So that's something that I think listeners here can try. If you're out, you know, that's the classic thing. You go out, you don't find the edibles you were looking for, but you're always going to find Russulas, the bright yellow and red mushrooms with the brittle gills. We all see them out in the redwood and mixed forests here. And now we have a purpose. We can pick them and put them under UV light. So thank you for giving us that tool in our toolkit.
Well, thank you for it. I hope everyone takes that task off my back because I've got enough to do. But I would love to push forward with it for sure. At least get a few. But maybe I'm wrong. But I think there's still plenty to discover. I think if you find anything, shine a UV light on it, see what happens. You know, it's play, isn't it? I think that's the other beautiful thing about mushrooms for me is there's an element of mindfulness to it. You know, you're out there, you're connecting with nature, and there's that sense of childlike wonder that gets lost when you get old. You know, you just sort of look at stuff, you know, it's a thing, but then if you actually look at it, you get a loop, a jeweler's loop, and you look at the tiny things, it's like, wow, that's amazing. You know, you really appreciate what's there.
That's why you never get past the parking lot usually when you go out. No. I mean, you know, we literally, I think we got about 5 feet for about an hour time. It just, you know, between with the loop and what you're finding, depending obviously the time. But in regards to when you were saying with childlike, it's back to the elders in Eastern Europe where you are taken out with your grandparents and shown and you go and forage and you foray and you are taught. And the fear is not taught. It's the information. We need to expand on that. We need to encourage that don't teach the fear. You need to educate the children as to what they're doing in however you do it, with, you know, laughter, with UV, whatever it is, get that information out to that generation so that they know and not have that fear of it.
Yeah, I think big picture wise, you know, fungi is a gateway to appreciating, you know, nature as a whole. And I think that's where we're at really with all of it. And then building that, you know, community, I think a lot of the communities have been broken or lost and the fungi community is really amazing. You know, everyone just immediately gets on. I've met so many people from doing this from all around the world and we've all got a common language. We've all got, an interest and willingness to share because we don't know everything about mushrooms. You know, there's always something to learn and there's always something to discuss. And that's, you know, it was amazing at the festival to see the mushroom farms as well, the people that are cultivating. They started talking and they're like, oh my God, why aren't we talking? We can share tips and techniques. And, you know, lots of people were just opening dialogue. I think that's really important throughout all of these kind of aspects of fungi. You
know? And no language barrier. I mean, we had Mariana who is coming over from Italy and she was saying that there is a mushroom out there. Do you remember which mushroom? And it was a mushroom that South America had found out that it helps with bedwetting for children. But they'd also found out that in Europe, the same way, but without communicating, and somehow they found the same way it could heal. And it's there is no language barrier because of it. It's about the mushroom.
I was saying before, you know, it feels like an actual coalescence of culture, and it's a culture based around something that's not man-made or something that it's like a natural process. It's grounded in science. And I think also what helps kind of, I don't want to say that like fungi culture is the best culture, but it's the idea too of people getting that connection to something greater than themselves, right? It's like the best part of, not to step on anyone's toes, but the best part of religious experience and religious community is that connection to, oh, we're all interested in something greater than ourselves, something that is connecting us, that is like this power that we can all tap into. And I think for so many of us in the mycology community, this gives you that. It gives you that feeling, but then it also gives you kind of a deeper appreciation for the world around you. But like you said, and Max kind of demonstrates, with great power comes great responsibility. So when you have these superpowers of observation, you have to, you know, also keep your head up and look at other people and not just get totally lost in the world around you. But I love that you've included children in this next festival, because when we were talking about play and you were talking about the importance of play, you know, there is no better mushroom hunt that I've ever been on, really any mycological event, than having kids involved. Or what should I say? There's no better thing you can do to make a mushroom hunt better or mycological event better than to have kids involved. I still, one of my earliest memories of mushroom hunting, when I was first getting kind of tied into community here, we had my friend's son with us, who was 9 years old, and we had Soma Camp, Sonoma County Mushroom Camp. So there are all these experts there. We kind of snuck in. It was a great experience. And then afterwards, we were like, we're going to go mushroom hunting in one of these other areas. And we just bumped into a few of the speakers and organizers from this event who were just out on their own. And it was this beautiful experience walking around with them and having my friend's son run out ahead of everybody and spot the mushroom and just get so excited. And I had one of the guys turn to me. It was Larry Evans, who's kind of Indiana Jones of mushrooms here, turned to me and just said, you know, I haven't been this excited about a chanterelle as I am when this kid gets excited about it. So I love adding that element. I think it makes things so much more fun and adds that, such that element of play and excitement.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, it's hugely important for us to inspire the next generation of mycologists. So, yeah, we're really excited, and we've got quite a lot of tailored activities and things going on. And there's also some really inspiring young mycologists in the UK, which we'd love to support. Yeah. And I think, you know, the further we go down this path, the more we'll be able to do to kind of like support and nurture that talent. Because, yeah, there's a few kids out there that are really, really good at ID already. And, you know, I think I kind of wish I'd got into it 10, 20 years ago. And just to see them at the stage that they're at now, at this age, it's just incredible. And you think what they're going to be like in 10 years' time. It's very inspiring. And it fills me with hope, you know. So there's so much to learn. And I think they're the people that are going to figure some cool stuff out. So, yeah, fingers crossed.
Well, and music. I mean, at the festival, it's, you know, we end the evening with music, and we have... So Brian D'Souza, a.k.a. Auntie Flo, did the first time at the festival was the biosonification, and he used oyster and reishi and lion's mane. And it was just wonderful. And again, it brought out the children in all of us, because he did the lights with it, and we were just in awe. It was so much fun to watch him play around with that and experience that.
That's another amazing discipline. We're talking about UV as a way to experience these organisms in an entirely different way. But what's going on with biodata sonification right now, you're seeing, I mean, I think Plant Wave was the first one who commercially kind of popularized that idea. But there have been so many people doing this before, and it's amazing to see that community kind of flourish, really.
Yeah, definitely. It's amazing to... Yeah, be present in amongst those weird modular bleeps and squeaks. That's just, yeah. It's bizarre, but yeah, fascinating stuff.
Well, and we've got, we want to support new businesses and young people who are just experimenting. I mean, we have some amazing artists, Simcoe, who are coming from Amsterdam, who work with slime mold and use it on these sculptures. And it's just fascinating, absolutely fascinating, and create their own music to go with it.
Yeah, we also have Slime Mold Sunday at the festival. I'm a big fan of Myxomycetes, and I don't know, I think it might have been Leah Mycelia that created the Slime Mold Sunday hashtag.
I think so.
So have to shout out her for that, and the group on Facebook, the Slime Mold Appreciation group. Yeah. It's incredible, the amount of knowledgeable people in there. It's definitely got me out of some tricky situations. So yeah, we're doing Slime Mold Sunday, where we've got kind of like live slime molds and we go out on a slime mold hunt, and it's, you know, it's a bit of a different pace to a mushroom hunt. It's kind of like, you know, you find some habitat and you dig and you have a little look around. And I've got a pet slime mold which I've had for a couple of years. He's called Slimen, and I was lucky enough to sort of, I was out one night with a UV torch and I picked up a log and it broke in half and there was like this orange crusty stuff in the middle. And I kind of suspected it might be a sclerotia. So I took it back, popped it into a food container. Sure enough, with a bit of moisture, it came to life. And I've kept it ever since. And he came to the festival last year. He made an appearance. He was very happy about it. He met some pretty famous people. It's cool. And he's coming to Nikki's exhibition. I like to take him out and about and introduce him and play with slime molds as much as possible.
And I think we're going to do a maze with him this year too.
We're talking about a maze, yeah. We might create a little maze for him. The problem with Slimen, he doesn't really like oats. A lot of the captive slime molds are usually Fusarium and Badhamia. So they kind of feed quite well with oats. Mine doesn't. So every time I put oats in, it just doesn't really go for it. It prefers a natural diet of like sticks and bark and things. It will crawl on that. But it's really interesting to find that out though, because the oats ended up getting some pin mold on and going moldy. And at the top, the slime mold was surrounding the pin mold. It was kind of all balled up and it was a dark orange. And the same organism was down on the piece of wood and it was fanned out and it was feeding and it looked happy and it had a lighter color. So it was quite fascinating to watch that and figure out that it didn't like oats. Yeah, I would recommend everyone to get a pet slime mold if possible. It's hours of fun.
It's the new ant form.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Recommend.
Yeah. The pet rock, you know, we've gone through pet rock, the chia pet. Yeah, it's slime mold now.
Better than a Tamagotchi.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't compare Slimen to these inanimate things. I love that, though, because it is, you know, as you were saying that, and I'm sure there are people listening. Again, we're broadcasting on 103.3 KPCA here in Petaluma. We're here with Jana Nicole and Max Mudy, founders of the All Things Fungi Festival in the UK. And we are talking right now about pet slime molds. And, you know, as we're listening to that, it's like, man, that's kind of odd. But why? I mean, it's another organism. We have pets of all different kinds. Why not a pet slime mold? And it also made me think of Alan Rockefeller, one of the early events that I went to here in Oakland, California, and he had all of his mycelium dishes out with all these interesting species. He might have had a Styptochis plate as well, showing off some UV, but he had some of these different plates. And my wife asked him, you know, are you going to kind of grow these out? Or are you going to cut? He's like, no, these are my pets. So nice. Yes, yeah. Let's normalize having fungal organisms, myxomycetes. Why can't we commune with them in that very similar relationship?
I say, I want a nematode. I want to do the hyphae and get to...
See the snares and the traps. Yeah.
You want to trap a nematode?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, who's the pet then? Is it the fungus or the nematode?
Exactly.
Both, yeah. I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would definitely be fun. I'd like to see that. It was actually Sydney who inspired me to Coprinus comatus, the shaggy ink cap. That apparently turns predatory on low nutrient substrate, but instead of a lasso, it has like a spear. So I understand. So that was kind of what we wanted to look at under the microscope.
It's oysters.
Quite dark. Oysters as well. Yeah, there's a fair few. Provimbohalia. It's quite a lot. Definitely fun. But bat slime molds, I mean, you know, they're just beautiful. And I think because I specialize in macro photography, I'm able to sort of see that intricate beauty. And again, very inspired by Alison Pollock, Marin Mushrooms. Her photography is incredible. And there's a guy in the UK, Barry Webb, who's going to be at the festival, and his photography is just insane.
Slime Mold Sunday.
Yeah, so Slime Mold Sunday is going to be a big one. I'm very excited.
Yeah, it's, I mean, the awesome lineup is, it's the closer we get, the more exciting it does get, and without giving too much away. But I know Max is, watching Max work and photographing everything, it's wonderful to be out there and see that.
Tell us a little bit about that practice, Max, and I know, you know, this is something that could be full courses and many interviews, but I did interview Alison Pollock, and she told me about her process of having to very carefully dial in the focus on like these millimeter or less, whatever, micrometer sections of these organisms and then kind of combine that. So tell us a little bit about your photographic practice, because I know for anybody from the amateur to the expert, we can always improve on our photography, whether it's to use as observations or just because they are beautiful art pieces. Tell us a little bit about your practice.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I had a camera in my hand from the age of 16. I'm you know, approaching late 30s now. So I've been taking pictures for a long time. I went and did a degree in photography in Bournemouth. I did a BA, and it was very much fine art photography. And I really kind of lost the love for photography after that. It was very conceptual and ideas based. And, you know, if you take a bad photo, but you had interesting theory to back it up, then it was an interesting project. And I get that. But for me, it kind of bent my brain a little bit. And it wasn't until like fungi and slime molds came into my life that I really started enjoying photography again. So the process, it's very similar to probably what Alison described. I think that it's called focus bracketing or focus stacking. There's various ways to do that. And essentially what you're doing is, like you said, you're focusing on the front of the subject, and then you're taking a series of photos, but moving the focal length incrementally until you photograph the whole subject. So let's say a millimeter slime mold, you could take 80 photos, and then you piece them together in specialist software, which gives you that clarity at that such a small level. Yeah, it's kind of like, there's various different techniques. You can do it manually with a rail. There's some cameras that have inbuilt bracketing, which really speed things up now. And for the real tiny stuff, I use microscope objective attached to a tube assembly, and that's on an automated rail. So the automated rail, I set the step length to move at like 2 micrometers, and then it does it automatically. So I just do all the settings, set the lighting, stack it, and then it's, you know, hopefully you win some, you lose some. You don't know if it's a good photo until you get home, and it's just like, well, that one works, that one didn't. You know, there's all sorts of factors which can ruin a photo when you're shooting at that magnification. Yeah,
but you took, I mean, we were out for about a good hour, and I think it was what, 2,000 photos?
Oh, easily. You know, you some stacks are like 150 images per like stack, and then if you want to move it, adjust the lighting. I take thousands of photos every time I go out. Most of them aren't that great.
Well, that's
Most are. I'm sorry.
He's being humble, but that's very, one secret of photography I've discovered is just take a lot of photos. There'll probably be a good one in there. And I love always hearing about macro photography. And thank you for pulling that word out of the ether, focus stacking. That's exactly what my brain was searching for. But for those of us who don't have the rail and aren't doing the focus stacking, any like basic tips and tricks, because I don't often get a true photographer to speak with, but any basic tips and tricks for people that want to photograph their finds in the field, especially with an eye toward making it maybe a little more scientifically useful?
Okay, I just have to say one thing. The first bit is being able to recognize it and see it. Max has the superpower of this eyesight, and we go out and he can narrow in on something that nobody else sees. And it is, you know, a millimeter. It is tiny. And I think that's the first thing, is being able to slow down, breathe in nature, stop and look. And that's what Max does.
I think part of those things you can learn, you know. I think you can train your eye to look for certain colors and look for certain shapes, and then you need to understand habitat. So if you know the habitat, and then you start to pick these things up. I mean, tip wise, I mean, I'm a firm believer in trying to inspire people to utilize the equipment that they've got, because to get a good photo, you don't necessarily have to have all the equipment. Obviously, if you're talking millimeter big things, then equipment helps. But really, it's lighting and subject. So if you've got good lighting and a good subject, you're probably going to get a good picture. And there's things that you can find around the house that can help you. I take around this white piece of card. And if you put white next to a subject, the light's going to reflect on that. So you're going to brighten up one side of the mushroom. You can use tin foil, which you've got in the house. I don't know if you aluminium foil. So that's going to reflect light. I've seen people use like bits of black velvet for backdrops. And then there's kind of like clip-on macro lenses and things like that. And I think, you know, If and you can also use little torches and things, and then you can incorporate the tin foil, the white card, and a torch, and you can bounce light off, maybe not directly onto the mushroom, but and then it's just playing. You know, some are going to work, some aren't. But you, if you take enough photos and spend enough time with it, and don't just sort of click one and go, oh yeah, I'm done, because I find a lot of my good photos will come after I've actually worked a little bit for it. You know, I've moved things, I've recognized that that might not be quite right, and then there's, you know, there's tweezers and there's brushes where you can sort of clean bits up and move things around. So yeah, there's lots of little tips and tricks, but I'd really want to inspire everybody to use what they've got. It's not all about the equipment. You know, a lot of people say, oh, you must have a good lens, and it's like, yeah, I've also got like 20 years experience, massive debt from a degree that I did, and hours of practice. So yeah, that's right. Yeah, I think there are things that you can find around the house to really help you improve your photography. But the best tip is, if there's good light and a good subject, you're going to get something good.
Yeah, and I love that about play and practice. You know, that's something that I constantly have to remind myself. It's like, just get out and try things. Like, don't overthink it. Yeah, take that note card, take that aluminum foil, set it up, see what it does. Like, take a bunch of pictures with things set up this way, move it around, take a bunch of pictures with it set up that way.
Exactly.
And that's kind of moving the knobs to figure out, what does this do, and start learning, you know, catching up to Max, getting a little bit of that experience on what some of these things are that you can do.
Yeah, recognizing where the sun is in the frame and things like that, you know. I think the beautiful thing about mushrooms as well is, a lot of people will wait for the angle of the sun in the morning or the evening, but midday sun in the woods is actually really cool. You know, you've got this real dappled effect in the background, and it can be really, really exciting. So it doesn't matter what time of day it is, what time of year it is, you can go out and find stuff. And I think that's the other thing I'd like to mention about the micro fungi, and that, you know, you can find these things in the city center. I was dog sitting for my friend the other day in Brighton, and they have like a courtyard which is like 2 meters by 3 meters concrete. They've got some plants and things out there, and I just figured I may as well go and have a look out there. And then, you know, within the space of about 10 minutes, I found a slime mold and 2 species of fungi. And that's like city center Brighton, and this can be any city. You know, you find decomposing organic material and you've got a good chance of finding slime mold or fungi.
We found it
in the front garden. We haven't identified the species yet either, yeah. Which is quite frustrating.
So for anybody, we need some help.
Yeah, it's slime mold help. It's a Dederma, and we think it might be, I don't know. We've had a few people look at it, and I find there's not a huge amount of literature for that available for people. So it's quite difficult. You know, I've got this book, and it only gets you so far. So then it's just an unknown still. But yeah, in the front garden, there was a couple of species of slime mold, and there's plenty of fungi. So wherever you are, you can find it if you look hard enough.
And can I just say that the same follows through for painting and drawing. And if you want to, you don't have the camera, take a pencil, take some paints. You know, you don't need many colors. Go out, sit there. Just sketch it, just get the shape. You come back and, you know, use the ink, use the collage, use scissors, anything to get that across to, and have some fun with it. It's all just about observing the mushroom and enjoying it and being out there.
Well, and you read my mind, Jana. You know, we heard about how for Max, fungi kind of transformed his artistic discipline. And I was curious what it did for you. You know, have you now just started painting mushrooms all the time? Did it give you a deeper appreciation of color? Talk about that a little bit, your journey as an artist after kind of colliding and coalescing with fungi.
Well, for me, it was going out and watching, observing Max and everybody. And especially if Max is sitting there photographing something for some time, that gives me the opportunity to sit and paint. And, you know, I bring my backpack, I have colored pencils, I have ink. I really want to explore getting colors from mushrooms and getting the dyes and pushing all of that and getting the ink cap and using the ink from the ink cap and painting with that. We had a young lady, Kate Shorey, who made mushroom paper. So I wanted to paint on the mushroom paper with the mushroom ink and trying to keep it all natural. So for me, that's where it's been taking me, that journey, that mushroom journey, is trying to use everything from nature and learning about it. But it's also the detail. If you look at the roots and the hyphae and how teeny it is when I go to cut it, and I'm using a scalpel, and then I have to use a magnifying glass to see under it to get to that detail, and then coloring it in and using the watercolor. It's just all the layers of it, and it makes you appreciate what's underground and what's there in the soil and the teeny tiny living creatures.
Nikki and I actually met at her solo exhibition. So I saw that it was on. I got an invite, and I was like, okay, artists working with mycelium mushrooms, cool. I'll go and check it out. And I was literally blown away. It was insane. Some of these pieces are like, massive. You can almost get into them. And I love that morphologically, a lot of the mushrooms are very accurate. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's just incredible to see that Nikki paints, then cuts out, and then creates these amazing collage pieces. It's really inspiring work, and it's nice. I think we need to collaborate more on the artistic side of things. That's on the cards. You know, we work a lot with the festival together, but artistically, we need to collaborate a little bit more for sure.
We've talked about it. There's a piece that we envision that we want to do with Max's beautiful photography and using the collage and cutting it out, but getting it scientifically right. I mean, my angle is, it's not exact. I'm mixing, I'm using artistic license. I'm using whatever color I want. It's my garden. It's my piece. I get to play with it. But yet there's the side where I do want to get it scientifically correct. And, you know, coming together with Max and using his photography, it's telling a proper story, I guess, is, the writing that goes with it. So yeah, we've talked about putting a piece together, but finding the time to do it.
Yes, there's a lot going on.
And writing a book.
We didn't realize how much work running a festival was either. You know, we were just like, yeah, we'll do this. We'll put this on. And then
it sounds like a great idea. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it definitely is. It is a great idea, but it's a lot of work. You know, I've got a day job, and then I come home and I work in the evening and on this, and Nikki does the same. And yeah, it's a labor of love, but.
I think it's like giving birth. If nobody tells you, you think, oh, it's going to be difficult, and you never want to do it again once you do it. And then enough time goes by, you're like, you know what? I feel like I do this again. This is, here's enough time. Let's start it again. But I think the takedown, we didn't realize, we had giant teepees, we had yurts, all the structures. There was a few health and safety
we didn't have anyone to help either. We basically did, Nikki, Richard, her husband, and myself pretty much did everything, and with a couple of other volunteers. So yeah, it was a lot of work. We were there, we were probably on site for about a month, all in all. Yeah, we've learned a lot, and we understand where we need to improve and what we need help with. So yeah, I'm very much looking forward to not having to do all of that again.
With any grand undertaking, I think there's always an element of naivete that's needed to get yourself stuck in. Because if you knew too much, you'd know, whoa, I don't want to do this. So
exactly.
I love hearing that story of learning. And quick translation note, just because you've been saying Nikki, I know that that's Jana's nickname. Sorry. So when he's talking about Nikki, he's talking about Jana. And of course, we're going to have links to all your guys' work when we have the podcast listed on the website and all the various platforms for listener on the radio. You can go there, find links to your guys' work. Just while we've got a couple minutes left, remind us where the festival is, when it's running, and any other previews.
The festival is the Chitting Lai Estate. It is running from September 13th through the 15th of this year.
September,
did I?
And Sussex, UK.
Beautiful. Well, and honestly, for me, this is the kind of stuff where it's like, if you're ever planning a trip to the UK, here's something you could plan your trip around, is going to the All Things Fungi Festival. But yeah, I absolutely love hearing about that. And, I think we've covered a lot of different elements of fungi, all the different mushrooms we love. We've gotten into mixos, which I want to point out for listeners, myxomycetes and slime molds are not the same thing. They're actually not part of kingdom fungi. I know all of us have been talking about that implicitly, but it's kind of this other frontier to explore. So I'm really excited to hear about that. So I want to ask you both, as a wrap-up question, your fungus of the moment, and I'm going to expand that to say fungus or mixo of the moment. And Jana, if we can start with you, or whoever wants to start.
You start.
I mean, I like the ones that I haven't discovered yet or haven't identified yet. So
ooh, it's great answer.
It's an unknown for me. I can't say, but you know, there's so much out there to discover. I've got so many I couldn't list them all because I don't know them yet.
That's a beautiful answer.
And I would say, I guess it's classic Amanita muscaria because of the culture, the history, the folklore. It's one of those that you put that picture up, everybody can identify with, and it has stories to deal with Santa Claus. Every culture has a reference to it, and I think it's an absolutely amazing fungi.
And you know, with this whole conversation, we've been talking about culture because that's what you guys are participating in, is building culture. But when we think about the Amanita, the image everyone gets in their head, the fact that there's an emoji, I think of Andy Letcher, who says in his great book, Shroom, you know, we are the mushroom people. This is already such a mycologically informed culture. And it's beautiful to see that just constantly grow and grow and grow as we get more and more familiar with these organisms. Well, Jana and Max, thank you guys so much for coming on the show. I want to remind our listeners on KPCA, you can find more about their work and you can find more Mushroom Hours on welcometomushroomhour.com. But thank you guys so much for coming on the show. It's been an absolute blast.
It has been an absolute honor. Thank you. Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, much appreciated. Thank you so much. It's great to meet you.
Very much great to meet you.